Hey, reader. I'm Cindy Burnett. Welcome to my award-winning podcast, Thoughts from a Page, which is a member of the Evergreen Podcasts Network. On the show, I chat with authors whose books I have enjoyed about their new releases, and I give you a peek behind the curtain of the publishing industry with my Behind the Scenes series. With so many books coming out weekly, it can be hard to decide what to read, so I find the best ones and share them with you. If you're looking for a community of readers, bonus content, and a chance to read books before they hit the shelves, I hope you'll consider joining my Patreon group, which is filled with a wonderful bunch of book lovers. The link to join is in the show notes. Today, Piper Hughley returns, this time to chat about American Daughters. As soon as I saw this book, I knew I needed to read it. I have always been totally intrigued with Alice Roosevelt, and I didn't know very much at all about Portia Washington. And I definitely did not know that they had been friends for a good amount of their lifetimes. It's such a fascinating read, and very interesting how much their lives paralleled each other. Piper is the author of By Her Own Design, as well as the Home to Milford College and the Migrations of the Heart series. She is a multiple-time Golden Heart finalist. Piper blogs about the history behind her novels on her website, and she lives in Atlanta, Georgia, with her husband and her son. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.
Welcome back, Piper. I'm so glad you're here again.
I'm so glad to be here again. Thank you for having me, Cindy.
Absolutely. I loved American Daughters. I actually picked it as one of my April Buzz picks for the Houston magazine that I write for. It's such a great read.
Oh, thank you. And there's a Texas connection. So
exactly, which yeah. I always love. Anything that's going to be connected to Texas. And the other great connection with recent things in the news and on the screen is that Booker T. Washington showed up in the Gilded Age. And I would think I was reading your book around the time that he was in the show. And I was like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah, okay. I have not seen season 2 yet, so now I'm going to have to move it up and make that a priority.
You definitely are, because I felt like they paired so well together.
They do, and I've had other people approach me who've read American Daughters to tell me that, about American Daughters, to say, you know, hey, this might be a great thing to do once people are waiting for the next season of Gilded Age. I say, hey, yeah.
Absolutely. And the other thing that I was telling you before we started recording was that I loved your last book, By Her Own Design. And my daughter goes to school in New York City, and we were at the Met, and there's an exhibit, or I don't know if it's still there, Women Dressing Women, and an Anne Lowe dress was there. So I showed my daughter, I started talking all about your book, everybody was gathering around. I was like, oh, you have to read this book by Piper Hughley. That's the only reason I know Anne Lowe. So that was really fun.
Thank you so much. Yes, I think they borrowed the dress from the Tampa Museum, because it was a big, you know, to do when it returned or whatever. But they should have that exhibit on permanently. It's about women.
Absolutely. And it was very popular. It was so crowded in there. We didn't actually get through the entire exhibit because there were just so many people. As we were heading out, I saw Anne Lowe's name, and then they talked about Jackie Kennedy and this dress and everything. And I was like, oh, that is just so cool. So I was very glad I knew about her.
Very cool. Thank you. Yes.
Well, let's turn to American Daughters. Will you give me a quick synopsis, please?
Yes. American Daughters is about the secret interracial friendship between Alice Roosevelt Longworth, who is the daughter of Theodore Roosevelt, and who I sometimes call TR, and Portia Washington Pittman, who is the daughter of Booker T. Washington. These two young ladies met in the wake of a great kerfuffle in the country, and became friends in 1901, a friendship that lasted more than 75 years until Portia's death in 1978. So American Daughters traces their lives as good daughters, good wives, good mothers, and the ways in which they both supported and sought their way to their own liberation.
I loved that. And I know the answer to this next question because you have a fabulous author's note, which I really encourage everyone to read, but I want my listeners to know the answer. How did you learn about their friendship and then decide to write about it?
Well, I've been doing a lot of research talking about Booker T. Washington on the family and reading Portia's biography. came across the mention in one of her biographies. And then I started looking at all of Alice's, because there are a number of Alice's biographies, and saw one mention in the one that I consider, of course, to be the most comprehensive biography of Alice Roosevelt Longworth, and wondered why there wasn't more about their relationship. I mean, I kind of knew why, but I thought it was a shame that, you know, at least there wasn't a story there, because both of them had so much in common with one another. Yet we don't hear as much, we don't know as much because of this racial divide. So that's what intrigued me, to sort of do what historical fiction does, that is, to use fiction to kind of fill in the gap, historically speaking, and talk about, you know, and juxtaposing the lives of these two women who were both in a difficult position, being daughters of great statesmen. Who are you going to marry when daddy is like at the top of the world? You know, that's a difficulty. And how do you find your place apart from daddy's shadow, you know, as well? So, like I said, both of them had a lot in common as women, but just this racial aspect meant that we don't have a public facing record of their friendship. So for me, it was intriguing and fun to think about how and in the ways in which their lives might have overlapped and intersected to maintain this connection that they had for more than 75 years.
And the other thing you highlight in your author's note is, while some stuff has changed, there's a lot that's still the same. And I really loved what you wrote there and how important it is to try to bridge some of these gaps.
Especially when you have a lot in common, you know, when there is an area of commonality, why not? Why not start from that and see where a relationship, and particularly insight into somebody else's world, the way they live, what they know, could be. I think that we all can learn from one another. And I know that both of these young ladies, in terms of the role model that they provide, learned from one another. Alice Roosevelt Longworth is someone very intelligent, very capable, but I think on some level probably was bitter because she was not allowed to use that intelligence and capability to in her own service to achieve what she did best, which a lot of people, you know, looking at her life, she was born during today. She'd be a politico. She'd be running a political campaign, or she would be one of the pundits on cable TV news or something like that. She had an incredible political instinct that could have been used in terms of enhancing her own happiness. Portia's drive to learn music, to be a musician, and then to use her music talents to educate others in service of the music was, I think, something that Alice probably would have looked at and admired. In a way, yes, Portia was a young Black woman at a time when racism was horrific, but she at least was more free than Alice to pursue what she was passionate about. So they both could learn from one another. And I think that's something that we still can have and do today in the midst of all of this. What we have now in the country is division, if people would see their example and follow it.
I agree completely. So was it daunting to write about these two women who are fairly prominent figures in history?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't daunted by it. I think the thing that was more daunting to me is that, like I said, there's not a lot of public facing records about their relationship. So the way that I had to create it, I think, was the more daunting thing. There have been other historical fictions about Alice Roosevelt Longworth, for instance. So not that I relied upon them in terms of examples or anything else like that, but people feel as if they know her. But in terms of those other books, one thing that I noticed about them was, you know, everybody knows her to be so feisty and, you know, uproarious and whatnot. But nobody ever bothered to investigate the why that was. And I was intrigued to think more about what pained her, what made her, what created her to be the feisty one, of which her father said, you know, I can either run the country or I can control Alice, but I cannot possibly do both at the same time. Circumstance. What was it that, you know, gave her this whole phenomenon of what I call the look at me dad phenomenon? Because that was a large trajectory of her life in terms of getting her father to actually see her, which I think a lot of people can relate to that struggle of being seen as a human being or whatever. But when it's your own parent, the only parent you have left, who's not doing it, that's incredibly painful. So I was less daunted and more intrigued to rise to the challenge in regards to Alice. And for Portia, who has not been portrayed before that I know of in historical fiction, for me, I was off to the races with her, because I see Portia in a way that my father was a classical musician, and somebody like Portia paved a road for my father to be able to do that. And so I saw portraying her by historical fiction more as a tribute to, you know, let people know that Booker T. Washington's philosophy, which gets discussed a lot, and he's coming back around in terms of a different way in which people are looking at him, was not what people think it was in terms of his aspect of saying that Black people should just do menial jobs, menial labor, and that's all that should be there for them. That's not what his philosophy was. He gets a lot of misunderstanding in that regard. I think he had a more complex understanding about racial relationships in this country than people give him credit for. But when it came time for his own Black daughter to achieve her goals or to do what she wanted, he supported her. And that's important, I think, for people to know. I know for my father, his father, initially thought of music as a superfluous kind of fluffy thing for him to pursue. I think a lot of people do think of the arts in that way. But back then, you know, we're talking about more than 100 years ago, Booker T. Washington didn't think that way about it, and he supported his daughter in her endeavor. So I think these are things in terms of at least bringing up the questions, which is another thing that historical fiction can do, bringing up these questions to be discussed in terms of how things are more complex than what people give them hope for, room for.
I agree with that completely. And also just being able to learn more about people that you don't necessarily encounter regularly, which for me was Booker T. Washington. I was definitely familiar with him, but I learned a lot more about him in your book. And then Portia, who I didn't know very much about at all.
Yes. There's a lot about him. So it'd be nice if I could write his story too, but we'll see what happens.
Exactly. That would be wonderful. Well, how did you decide on the format and the way you wanted to tell their friendship?
Well, as I said, to me, the format was more about the areas of their life that paired, that compared, that were similar in terms of that. And that's why I sort of divided it into the sections that I did. The whole thing about being a daughter of a very prominent man at this particular point in time and the pressure that involved, that they both had similarities in terms of that. Even though it's seemingly, because Alice was so out there and outrageous, as everybody loves to talk about her in that way, when she smoked in the White House and TR told her there will be no smoking under this roof. And so she goes on the roof of the White House to smoke instead. You know, everybody's like, oh, ha, 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 whatever. It's a pressure. And both of them had this pressure. Alice, who was someone who was a celebrity before you really get celebrities. And she said it herself. Her fame came at a time when you didn't have movies yet or movie stars yet. So who else would there be that people would lift up in this way but her, this very attractive young, everybody, you know, almost like creating a reality show about her before there was such a thing, you know, with the overarching question of, oh, here is a beautiful, young, very bright president's daughter. Who's going to marry her? What is the question? Let's follow. There were dresses made of Alice Bloom. There were songs written about her, just her large overarching persona at a time in terms of celebrity, like I said, when that really didn't exist. That spotlight was intense for her. And Portia, on the flip side, while people may not know her in the same way, what one thing that has always existed in this country is a parallel ongoing Black media. And Portia was every bit as large and had the same kind of spotlight and focus on her in the Black community. And so all of the things that she did, the decisions she made, where she was going to go to school, how long she was going to stay there, all of those things were part of a similar kind of spotlight, albeit on a smaller level, which is why, again, I say they had these things in common. So the good daughter's pressure was one thing. And then coming to think about who are they going to marry and how do these men feel about being compared to their fathers-in-law in some kind of way. The expectation, of course, and my students are always appalled in this or whatever, when women married then, was to use all of your talents and intellect, everything that you had in service of your husband's goals, your husband's career. And this was something that Alice had sought to do when she married her husband, who was a congressman from Ohio, later Speaker of the House. And Portia, less so, because her husband's career as an architect, one of the first prominent Black architects, did not sustain them economically in any way. And she had to work. And this whole aspect of her having work and finding work, I think, was a more fulfilling thing for her as a wife until she couldn't tolerate it anymore. And of course, the trajectory of women in terms of the expectation of being mothers. Portia, who had that duty as she's simultaneously being Sid's wife, again, trying to find a way in which she could sustain her family more comfortably in, you know, in the midst of her husband's economic struggle. And then Alice, having that same spotlight being upon her, not having children till she was, what do they call generic pregnancy situation, until she was very old, also had another kind of pressure on her in that particular way. So all of these forces that sort of surrounded them both, like I said, were the things that they had in common. But then, you know, they make a particular decision. The book only goes to 1930, even though we know their friendship lasted nearly 50 years longer than that, when and how Portia makes the decision to leave Sid, which at that point in time was a huge thing. It was huge. And her decision to leave Sid is something I think, at least in terms of the way that ways that I thought about it, that Alice viewed and probably admired on some level, because she didn't have the same kind of way of liberating herself as Portia did, but sought to do it anyway. So that was what made me think about the ways in which to tell their stories, these ways in which women are put into these specific categories, always having to serve others, right? And not serve themselves. And so you should think about at what point in their lives could these two women who had so much in common seek to serve themselves? And what was that journey?
Absolutely. And so much of their lives, as you said, were spent serving others, kowtowing to others, whatever it was that it took. They just didn't have a lot of agency that they could pursue what they wanted to pursue.
Yes, exactly.
Well, did you have a highlight of writing the book?
Highlight of writing the book. You know, one of the highlights, I guess, you know, for each one of them, since they're equal protagonists, for me, in Portia's story, it was about her time in Europe when she could imagine or could see something whereby her music objectives could leapfrog like another 50 years or something like that in terms of thinking about herself as actually pursuing a career in classical music as a musician, and her time pondering what should she do was a highlight for me in terms of the ways in which she was viewed as not a Black woman as she would be viewed in the United States, but as a concert musician who happened to be Black there. Was something that I got a real enjoyment from writing. And as far as Alice was concerned, again, portraying her being who she was as someone who didn't have a filter potentially, but also portraying that aspect of the things that pained her in terms of her, particularly her marriage to Nick Longworth. It's so interesting with her because she wanted to be outrageous and wanted to be out there, whatever, but there were still some aspects where she expected a conventional marriage kind of situation. So those tensions with her, I think, for me, were fun to explore as well.
It had to be so intriguing just to learn all these various things about these women and try to figure out what to include and what not to include.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, the whole fact in terms of the book ending at the point when it did, you know, could have gone on another copy in terms of that. So, you know, but one thing the publishers are always talking about, and it's true, one of the things I've learned over the past few years in terms of talking to a number of book clubs in terms of By Her Own Design is that a lot of the books, marketing books, are shaped for book clubs, you know, to be able to take them in easily and digest them. So, this is why you don't see those big old doorstopper saga books like that they used to do back in the 80s and the 90s. But to have them go a particular length where book clubs could feel as if they could read it and have issues and things to discuss. I could have gone on, but that's not how it works these days.
Okay, that's so interesting. I knew books generally weren't super long and there was a window that publishers were targeting, but I'm not sure I realized it was related to book clubs.
Oh, yes, because it's quite a marketing, you know, team. And for me, in terms of, like I said, the book clubs that I've had the pleasure of speaking with over these past 2 years, what I've noticed about them is that they are segregated, which was another thing that compelled me to write this book. And also, as I knew it was coming out, and pointing out two other books that featured Black and white female relationships, even as it's been a research interest of mine in terms of literature for a long time. Yes, I had a lot of thought about book clubs and how they might receive it and maybe potentially even think about exchanging visits to discuss the relationship between these two women, etc. That's my hope for it. At least in terms of one of the things to say to get people talking about what they have in common. And book clubs do have a thing in common, right? So, yeah, but it is something that they think about. And, you know, the other aspect for book clubs in terms of the ways in which I seek to write my historical fiction is to make the writing more accessible for people. When I do my, what I call my unscientific experiments in my classroom or whatever, one of the things I notice and think about in terms of what is the reading capacity for an adult in the United States today? What are the things that make it readily easy for adults in the United States to read, to take up reading as a pleasurable activity when there's so much out there that they could be doing instead? I think about crafting my stories in that way, too.
Absolutely. And you referenced in your author's note, but you didn't give the titles, and you just referenced again two other books about interracial friendships. And I'm assuming, but I'm going to guess here, that you're talking about The First Ladies and Can't We Be Friends?
Right, exactly.
Okay, yes. Great. I just wanted to make sure I highlighted those in case people were looking for other books like this one. And that would be an interesting article, comparing and contrasting and talking about these relationships. And you mentioned that your book is set earlier than the other two.
Yes, yes. The time of the book starts before the other two do. But yeah, it's like I said, it's been a long-term scholarly interest of mine in terms of thinking about who writes about Black and white interracial female friendships and who doesn't. Often white authors would, but you wouldn't see Black authors doing it. And I always had a question about that. And of course, part of those questions always have to do with what are publishers publishing? What's being portrayed in terms of those relationships, all of that. But yeah, it's been a long time interest of mine. And I just may do that. I just may write an article about it.
I think you should. Well, I love your cover. I just think it's beautiful. And I wish more historical fiction covers looked like yours, not with women facing away, but instead either looking at the camera, looking at each other, whatever it is. Yeah. So how did your cover come about?
Oh, well, that's interesting that you say that, because one of my sort of, it's not a complaint or a wishes was to have a back turned cover, because they seem to sell. I don't know. But so I, yeah. Yeah, I didn't have anything to do with it. This was the concept that they came up with initially. And this time it was very few changes were made to it. The only change I think that I had suggested was having the red lettering and the shawl popping off of it. But yeah, so it is different in terms of that. But I my thing was like, oh, it seems like they sell more, even as I do lurk in a number of historical fiction groups. And, you know, a lot of them do seem to complain about the woman with her back turned.
Yes, people are very tired of it. I'm at the top of that list. And it's so funny that you say that, because I interviewed Rashonda Tate a few months ago about the Queen of Sugar Hill. And she said the very same thing, because I said, I love your cover. Hattie McDaniel's driving a car. She's not facing back. And she's like, I wanted her facing back. I'm like, well, I'm very glad she's not. So apparently, as I raise this with various historical fiction authors, I'm getting some pushback.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, if it starts a new trend and, you know, people want to, you know, buy these books instead, please go ahead and do so.
I'm on board with it. Well, Piper, before we wrap up, what have you read recently that you recommend? I know we talked about two books a minute ago. What else?
I finished a reread of The Best of Everything by Rona Jaffe, which is such a compelling story in terms of young women in publishing, yet back in the 1950s and all of the things that they had to go through to have their careers. This seems to be an ongoing interest of mine in terms of women and their labor. By Her Own Design is also about that, really. So it seems like it's the kind of thing that I do like to read. I also would recommend an upcoming title, In a League of Her Own, by Kyle Alderson, about Effa Manley, who was one of the owners of a Negro baseball league team. And that's coming out in August. So I, you know, want people to have that on their radar as well, in terms of another woman in her labor.
I really liked Kaya's last book, and I didn't realize she had a new one coming out. So I'm going to go look for that one when we're done.
Yes, yes. It's coming out in August, I believe.
Great.
Yes.
Good. Well, Piper, thank you so much for returning to the Thoughts from a Page podcast. I always love chatting with you, and I can't wait for American Daughters to make its way out into the world.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You've got questions, we've got answers. Business leadership, ownership, and sales can be challenging. Tune into the Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast to learn from the world's experts. Join me, your host, Diane Helbig, as I chat with people who have expertise in various areas of business. You'll enjoy the lively conversations that are focused on providing you with the ideas, tips, and suggestions you need to realize greater success. Get what you need for your business when you need it from the people who have the answers. Accelerate Your Business Growth is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Burn the Boats from Evergreen Podcasts. I interview political leaders and influencers, folks like award-winning journalist Soledad O'Brien and conservative columnist Bill Kristol, about the choices they confront when failure is not an option. I won't agree with everyone I talk to, but I respect anyone who believes in something enough to risk everything for it. Because history belongs to those willing to burn the boats. Episodes are out every other week wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. I would love to connect with you on Instagram or Facebook, where you can find me at Thoughts From A Page. If you enjoy the show, please consider joining my Patreon group to access bonus content and support the podcast. If you have a moment to rate the show or subscribe to it wherever you listen to your podcasts, I would really appreciate it. It makes a big difference. And please tell all of your friends about Thoughts From A Page. Word of mouth does wonders to help the show grow. The book discussed in this episode can be purchased at my bookshop storefront, and the link is in the show notes. I hope you'll tune in next time.
Hi there. I'm Heather Drago.
And I'm Sarah Saunders.
We host the podcast, That's a Hard No, about saying no and setting boundaries.
So you can become that true and empowered you that this world needs. Saying no isn't just okay.
It's the key to living an authentic, fulfilling life.
I'm a licensed professional clinical counselor. So while this podcast is in no way a replacement for one-on-one therapy, I suppose I know what I'm talking about.
I'd say so. We talk about learning to say no and set healthy boundaries and how it impacts mental health, physical health, relationships, parenthood, and more.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and visit our website, hardnopodcast.com.
We're here to help you find your no and say it unapologetically.
That's a hard no.
Coming up on 5 Minute News. I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not, it's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.